He was given a small parcel of scrub-covered hillside by the University of California, Santa Cruz, to teach gardening. And then he proceeded to turn the earth on the university's industrial agriculture. His garden on the hill leads us to ask, who was Alan Chadwick, and what did he mean by organic?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 912th edition of the Food Chain Radio program right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Paphos who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. But whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Ricochet on the boards. Hello, Rick.
Good day, Michael.
And producer Dylan Thompson. Hello, Dylan.
Morning, Michael.
Folks, let's see. I guess you can file this one under Michael Olson's third law of the food chain, which is cheap food isn't. As a student of Chinese language and literature, I spent many hours in the language lab at the University of California, Santa Cruz. When finished with the day's studies, I would stumble outside into the brilliant sunshine and witness a full-scale revolution in action. Adjacent to the lab, on a parcel of steep shrub-covered hillside, students from around the nation were dropping their studies in engineering, chemistry, and physics to dig in the dirt of a French intensive biodynamic garden developed by an actor from England by the name of Alan Chadwick. This garden, which was always filled with the youthful exuberance of its students, was somewhat of an enigma to me. Having grown up with the chores of farming and ranching, which included the hoeing of millions of weeds under a hot Montana sun, I could not quite understand why all the excitement was in that bubbling about in that garden, or why anyone would drop their studies to dig in the dirt. What am I missing? I often ask myself, sitting there on that log in the sunshine. Incidentally, I was not the only one asking the question. When those students called home to tell Mom and Dad that they were dropping their studies in chemistry to become an organic farmer, the phone began ringing off the hook in the university's chancellor's office. What I was missing in my gazing into that garden was a revolution in thinking about gardening, about food, and about how we go about living here on planet Earth. Today, that garden in the mind leads me to ask, who was Alan Chadwick? What did Chadwick and friends mean by organic? Can organic revitalize our planet Earth? Well, here to help us dig up some answers, we have Dr. Paul Lee, who is the author of There Is a Garden in the Mind. Dr. Lee, welcome back.
Hi, Michael. Nice to be with you.
Yeah, well, you know what? It's been a while. I think the last time you were on the food chain, way back in the Hundreds series, we were talking about herbs and healing.
That's right.
And you're still talking
herbs. I used to have a program here.
That's right. You're still talking herbs and healing, aren't you?
Yes.
Good. And your favorite herb is?
Thyme.
Thyme.
Marches on.
Thyme marches on. There is a garden in the mind. Now, is that a specific garden that you have in mind?
Yeah, the Chadwick Garden.
The Chadwick Garden at UC Santa Cruz. So it took 30 years to write this book.
Yeah, I don't know. It got toxic. I couldn't touch it for years. And mm-hmm. It opened up a theme that involved me. So I had to see my way through it, which I call the physical is vitalist conflict. And that was a big task to really figure that out.
There was a thing about being too close to a story as well to be able to write it. You know, if you're very close to something, it's hard to see how to write something, how to be a kind of objective about it. And if anybody was close to the Chadwick Garden, besides Alan Chadwick himself, it had to be Dr. Paul A. Lee, right?
Right. You know, what you say is so true because we're now developing the Chadwick Archive, and it's amazing how much material there is to be gathered, so I'm almost 50 years later. And I thought a lot about how difficult it was at the time to record what was happening. I mean, you you get engrossed in a project and you don't really realize that almost everything involved with it is precious if you're going to eventually do an archive. So it's fortunate that a lot of material has not been lost and is being gathered, and it'll finally be established at UCSC and made available to people that want to listen to Chadwick. We have something like 500 to 1,000 tapes of talks that Chadwick gave.
So and he was quite a talker, wasn't he?
Yeah, it's going to be a considerable deposit.
Well, Dr. Lee, we also have somebody here who is a product of that garden in that Alan Chadwick mentality. He's the assistant, he's the intern producer of the Food Chain, Dylan Thompson. Dylan, you're a student at the University of California, Santa Cruz. Where were you before you got into gardening and farming?
Well, Michael, I was actually on track to become an economics major.
So you are one of the students that kind of like dropped your studies in engineering and economics and literature and started digging in the dirt.
Well, I knew I had always been interested in organic farming, but I wasn't sure really the process of it, you know. Mm-hmm. And I did some work on Casvis, the lower garden, mm-hmm. on UCSC's campus, and it really, really set the pace for me.
It took you over, right?
It did, yes.
Well, Dr. Lee, let me ask you this. Here I was a student like Dylan is, studying English and Chinese literature, stumble out of the language lab up at Merrill College there at UCSC, and I'd sit on a log and I'd look into this beautiful garden and all of these kids were just enjoying the heck out of themselves digging in the dirt. What was I missing?
I don't know.
Why didn't I get it? Why
it was the age of flower power, Michael. I mean, we all got a whiff of that.
Uh-huh.
Floating down on a cloud from the Haight-Ashbury. So students wanted to reconnect with nature. And that's what Chadwick afforded. They were tired of industrial society in its late stage of self-destruction. And so to get a renewed relationship to the earth through organic gardening was the way to go.
And that's the start. Now, I should mention, of course, that you are a Harvard-trained mind doctor.
Yeah. I've got 2 degrees from Harvard. I have a divinity degree and a PhD.
So it's fair to say that you are a Harvard-trained mind doctor, then, right?
What do you mean by that?
Well, you're a doctor of thinking.
Yeah, right. Okay. I do a lot of thinking.
Good enough. And one of the things that you were thinking about way back when was the whole notion of building a university, because you were one of the first people at the University of California, Santa Cruz.
Yeah, I came the second year, 1966. Yeah.
And that university was kind of set up to be an experimental university, correct?
Right. It was for, let's say, the first 5 years, and then it kind of collapsed into a conventional institution.
But you were there for the first 5 years?
They were great years. They were led by Paige Smith, who was the guiding light of the first 5 years of the university, and Mary Holmes and Jasper Rose. And it was an innovative, marvelous time. But about 1970, it clicked, and the science establishment pretty much took over.
Well, but one of the things that you did was brought the notion of bringing a garden to a university. Now, was that kind of like something new in the University of California system?
No, it's very old theme. I had a church history professor at Harvard Divinity School, George Hunston Williams, and he wrote a book when I was there, and I actually helped him a little bit with it. He mentions my name in the introduction. First time my name appeared in the book, and it was kind of a portend. And the title of the book is Wilderness and Paradise, Think Desert and Garden. And Williams, as a church historian, traces the motifs of garden and desert, wilderness and paradise through Western culture from its sources in the Bible. And the second half of the book is on the idea of the university and how pioneers from the East went out into the wilderness to plant a garden to start a school. And he documents it. It happened historically. And so I had that in the back of my mind when I came to Santa Cruz. It was no more wilderness. We were at the edge of the country. But in any event, the Great Ranch landscape invited one to think of a garden. And then flower power was the big slogan of the time. And so that's partly what prompted me to do it.
And so you went to the university chancellor and said, we're going to plant a garden. What'd they say?
Yeah, I was surprised that I had the nerve, actually, to go to see Dean McHenry. He was kind of a bully, a very formidable guy. You didn't approach him lightly. But somehow I just had the courage to go on and say, let's do a student garden here. And he was an old farm boy, so he said, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's do it.
And there we are. So we have the germ of starting a garden at the University of California, Santa Cruz. And then along comes a guy named Alan Chadwick.
A British gardener
and Shakespearean actor. And we're going to pick up just who this character was, the original nature boy. On the front of Paul Lee's book, There is a Garden in the Mind, there's a picture of Alan Chadwick. And boy, he does look like the original nature boy. Now, this is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, Dr. Paul Lee, Dylan Thompson, and you. We will be right back. And this is going to be fun.
Get this. You can earn a 5, 6, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city. You can be old or young, rich or poor, married or single. You can rent, lease, or own. You can farm small fruits on prairie bench lands, houseplants in coastal valleys, flowers on steep wooded hillsides, vegetables in city green belts, ornamentals in neighborhoods of million-dollar homes. There's only one catch. You must compete with other farmers for the consumer dollars. You can compete with others and win the consumer dollars with the help of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for profit in or near the city. MetroFarm is the Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner that will guide you step by step through the planning and development of your very own income-generating metropolitan farm. Abraham Lincoln said the greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living on a small parcel of land. Get in on the future today. Get a copy of MetroFarm at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, folks, we're way back there in the late 60s, early 70s. We are at the peak of the Green Revolution in agriculture across the land. We are going into a whole different way of doing things than we've ever done them before, growing crops with machines and chemicals and getting rid of the people. But yet, a guy shows up at the University of California. His name is Alan Chadwick. He's from England. He's a gardener. He's an actor. And he's about to raise all kinds of hell in agriculture. Knocks on the door of Dr. Paul Lee. And where did this guy come from, Dr. Lee?
We had a wonderful woman visiting the campus at the time. It was Countess Freya von Moltke. Very famous woman. Her husband was a resistor to Hitler and was executed toward the end of the war. And she was visiting Santa Cruz, and Chadwick was coming back from New Zealand and stopped off to see her. And she said, we had had lunch about a week or two before that, and she said, I hear you want to start a garden. And I said, yes. And she said, well, I have a man coming who will do it for you. So she told Chadwick to do the garden, and he did.
Wow.
And it was so funny. He went out the next day and bought a spade downtown and picked out that slope below Merrill and just started to dig. Didn't tell anybody, didn't tell me. I caught him out of the corner of my eye when I was driving up to class. And I went, oh, look, there he is
already.
Here we go.
So tell the folks about that ungodly piece of garden land, because it was not the most ideal place.
Chaparral and poison oak, and it was just a real unlikely place for a garden. Except it was on a slope, which Chadwick favored because of the relation to the sun, and drainage. So he was right in picking it, and it became one of the great garden sites, I think, in the state.
Well, and there he is. And what is it about this guy that he's an actor? He was a sometime actor. He was a spellbinding lecturer. How did he go about building an awareness of his... did he have any academic credentials? Was he a doctor in gardening?
No, I don't think he even went to university. He went into acting instead as a career.
Uh-huh.
And, I've got a very fulsome way to put it. He was ordained from on high to replant the vital root of existence in the late stage of the self-destruction of industrial society. And it was as though he was on a mission without quite knowing it. I mean, he just went at it. He worked something like 17 hours a day, 7 days a week for 2 years before I said, Alan, you should take a weekend off. And I took him to Tassajara. So he was possessed, and the energy and the dedication and the devotion he had to what he did is what produced a kind of magnetic draw for students who pretty much flocked in to assist him and to come under his spell.
That they did. They flocked to him and away from their studies. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I have run across who were, I guess, taken
up by him. Yeah, they dropped out of school. A lot of them did.
Mm-hmm.
And picked up organic food and flower production as a career.
And, of course, what was it they found in Chadwick that they did not find out there in the world? I mean, what was it? It was like Chadwick became their father, their mother, their everything.
What he transmitted was a sacramental relation to nature. I mean, he reverenced the earth, and that spiritual aspect of what Chadwick did, I think, was what intrigued students and drew them to him. So that was unique. I mean, the spirit had gone out of the institutions of higher learning in this country, especially the secular ones, the state universities. And so if you were...
What do you mean by that? The spirit had gone out.
Well, you know, Page Smith, my great pal, who was the first provost of Kyle College, the first college at UCSC, wrote a book late in life called Killing the Spirit. And it was his indictment of higher education. So spiritual life was something that the university simply ignored. I mean, it's kind of a fate of the culture as well, that spirituality is disregarded as far as developing secularism. And so secularism is neutral regarding the spirit, if not just completely neglectful of it. And Chadwick is all spirit. And if you take the old meaning of the word spirit, you go back to the Greek, thumos, T-H-Y-M-O-S. It means courage, vitality, and spiritedness, as if you were talking about a spirited horse. So there was this old biological basis for spirit and spirituality, and then that got evaporated. I mean, it went up in a kind of amorphous cloud, and we lost completely the bodily basis for spirituality in terms of spirited, and you know, that's what got lost.
So we're going about the motions without any of the emotions.
Yeah, and without the passion and the dedication and the devotion and the reverence and all that Chadwick had in spades.
And he demonstrated it with...
With a spade.
With a spade.
That's right. I knew you were going to say that. And it was a special spade, too. It was a bulldog spade, made in England, Sheffield steel, guaranteed for life. And that was the spade he used. And it actually became the basis for the Smith & Hawken Tool Company. Paul Hawken picked up on Chadwick's spade and made a business out of it.
Huh. French intensive biodynamic. I mean, he brought this whole notion to the university, and everybody said, boy, that's a big mouthful for a garden. What is French intensive?
Well, that's the production system that was developed around the environs of Paris to provide Paris especially with the best quality food stuff. And it's raised bed, double digging, and so on, and strictly organic, by and large. I'm not sure how far...
But they didn't have anything else, right?
Yeah, they probably went partly industrial at some point. But there's a return to organic procedures in Paris, and they have organic markets that are mm-hmm. strictly organic. So the French intensive system was a development out of the Paris environment. And then,
I often think of the word truck farm. And how the word truck, I asked young Dylan if he knew what the word truck farm was, and he had never heard the word before. And but it's interesting, it used to, here in the United States, it meant people who were growing crops outside the city, and they would truck them in the town. But really, the word came from the French word troque, T-R-O-Q-U-E, which means to trade or barter.
Hmm.
And that is the agriculture that grew up around the time of Louis XIV, who demanded fresh food in winter. And so to satisfy this demand, what farmers did is they learned how to grow food under glass cold frames and whatnot in winter in Paris, and thus provide fresh food for that demand. And thus the word really, truck farm, really has much deeper significance than that old pickup bouncing down the road with a load of rutabagas. Just my thought. French intensive. Here's French intensive. What is biodynamic?
Well, that's the kind of secret that Chadwick harbored. Didn't really make much of it. And it goes back to Rudolf Steiner, who was a very peculiar, eccentric figure in the early part of the last century in Europe, in Switzerland and Germany. And he was a clairvoyant, which made him very unusual and eccentric, but also involved with all kinds of things. But he was a student of Goethe, and Goethe was very much involved in botany, as well as being the greatest man of letters of Germany and the author of Faust, the epic poem of German. And Goethe's botany interested Steiner. And so from that, he developed biodynamics as a really very sensitive system of food and flower production that Chadwick practiced and brought here.
Mm-hmm. And so we have French intensive, and we have biodynamic, and we have Alan Chadwick on a bit of scrub-covered hillside at the University of California, Santa Cruz. Now, what happens when Alan Chadwick goes up against the industrial agriculture of modern America? That with Dr. Paul A. Lee, he the author of There Is a Garden in the Mind, and we will be right back after these messages. If you'd like to join us, you may do so by calling 831-479-1080, 831-479-1080. Do stay tuned. Dr. Paul A. Lee, Alan Chadwick, organic, look out. So what happens when an English actor and gardener plants a garden at the University of California, Santa Cruz? Students drop their studies in engineering and chemistry and literature and start digging in the dirt. And they call home and they say, Mom, Dad, I'm going to be an organic farmer. And the parents, of course, they call up the University of California and say, give me the chancellor. What are you doing with my kid? What happened to Alan Chadwick?
What you just said reminds me of a letter we got. It went to the chancellor, actually the chancellor of the vice chancellor of agricultural sciences, gets a letter from an agriculturalist emeritus saying there's a cult that has fixed itself upon a slope at the campus of UCSC, and they don't use any chemicals for fertilizer or pesticide, and they plant by the moon. Now, what are you trying to teach students? You've got to remove that project immediately. And the vice chancellor wrote back and said, I completely agree with you, but I think it would be much better to let, because they don't use chemicals, to let the students watch the stuff die. And that would be a better learning experience than to force them out.
But it didn't die, did it?
It didn't die. It thrived.
It thrived. Tell us about how much that garden thrived, because I used to sit on my stump in the sunshine and just fresh out of that language lab, and I'd look at that Alan Chadwick garden, and it was just bursting with life.
See, I had to pick off a phrase, the principle of plenitude, in order to describe the productivity of Chadwick's green thumb. And it was amazing. And along with the principle of plenitude, went an economy of gift. That's the other thing that Chadwick introduced me to. He gave everything away. He never cared about money in the least. He didn't care about a salary. He didn't care about any kind of commercial aspect of what he did. All the flowers were picked in the morning and put out in a kiosk for the university community to take to their offices or dorm rooms.
Free flowers.
Free flowers. And free produce. And this economy of gift only meant that there was more to give. That's what was so remarkable about it. I picked up another slogan, too much zucchini. Yeah, I mean, it just, and that was the principle of plenitude. So there was something so burgeoning and productive and vital about the Chadwick Garden that it was what made it a magnetic draw.
And so we come to this divergence of of the way of doing things, which that you call physicalism versus vitalism.
Right.
And physicalism being that practiced by industrial agriculture, correct?
Yeah. It went back. I had to find the key. Why did organic, in a way, become undermined? So it had to be rediscovered and reaffirmed. And what's made it such a buzzword now? What happened? Why did organic get, in effect, erased? So it took me back to a key date, 1828, and a key experiment, the artificial synthesis of urea. And that's credited with the defeat of vitalism and the victory of physicalism. It meant you didn't need an organ, in this case a kidney, to make urea. You could heat up ammonium cyanide and at 100 degrees centigrade get organic urea. When Friedrich Wöhler, the chemist, said, "Urea, I found it." No kidding. And it's the beginning of organic chemistry. Okay, organic
urea,
chemistry, I mean, that sounds like an oxymoron to me. And organic chemistry is the chemistry of artificial synthesis.
Mm-hmm.
So from inorganic sources, you can artificially synthesize anything found in organic nature, in which case you don't need organic nature anymore. So in a way, all the scientists went from the garden into the lab, and they haven't come out.
And that's where they live today.
Yep.
And that is the the physicalism of industrial agriculture, where you no longer need life processes. You can manufacture it in a lab.
Hey, and Michael, do you know what happened about that time in the early part of the 19th century? They started calling factories plants. Where are you going today, honey? Oh, down to the plant. Don't forget your lunch.
Not going to the factory anymore. And yet, here in the garden, I mean, that is the basis of industrial agriculture, this physicalism.
Yeah.
What about the vitalism? What the heck are you talking about, vitalism?
Well, that was the argument for the integrity of organic nature, that there was something alive. Organic nature was alive. And the physicalist said, no, you don't know what that is. There's no physics or math for it, is there? Well, then what are you talking about? So they could reduce organic nature to the inorganic, which is to say matter. And for them, matter is all that matters. Matter is a combination of physical and chemical forces, and that's all there is in anything.
Just a bunch of building blocks.
Yeah.
No
and
God.
That thought, that principle took hold of the minds of scientists, and it's still in effect.
And so the agricultural professor emeritus from somewhere writes a letter to UCSC and says, you got to stop this heresy that these people are, that this Alan Chadwick is preaching. You have to stop it. You have to do something. And the university says, well, let's just let it die.
See, I'll give you another funny example of that. People would complain to McHenry and say, do you realize you've got a guy here that plants by the moon? And McHenry would say, well, my father was a farmer and he planted by the moon.
McHenry being the chancellor of the university.
Shut him up.
Yeah. And you tell the story about a chemistry professor up at the university.
Well, that was the signal moment when we had dinner together. And he said, Paul, do you know the garden has done more to ruin the cause of science than anything else on this campus? And I went, what are you talking about? And that's what really was the trigger for my going into the physicalist-vitalist conflict, which I found the synthesis of urea. It's important to state that synthetic urea is nitrogen and the basis for fertilizers. So, I mean, you got synthetic soils off of urea. And urea is also the basis for plastics. So synthetic soils and plastics as an outcome, a symbolic outcome of the takeover of industrial society couldn't be more powerful.
And not only industrial society, but our food.
Yeah, it's the food of industrial
society. It's what
society.
We eat.
Right.
And so these children of this industrial society who come from Los Angeles and San Francisco and cities around the country end up at the University of California, Santa Cruz, studying geology and chemistry and whatever, and then they find this garden.
Well, a lot of them had taken LSD, so psychedelics Psychedelics played a huge part in it. When I first met Chadwick and told him, I asked him if he'd do our garden for us, and he said yes, and we just chatted a little bit, and I don't know what prompted me to say anything to him, but I said, well, you know, the garden will probably be a therapy station for students coming off of drugs. And he looked at me like I just lapsed into Chinese. And that's exactly what the garden became. So, well, if you saw eternity in a grain of sand, you know, you wanted some kind of ecstatic relationship to the earth, and that's what Chadwick provided.
Some way of healing.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Mike Lolson here with Dr. Paul A. Lee. Also, young intern Dylan Thompson, who is a student at the University of California. And you are studying agriculture, correct, Dylan?
Yes, I am.
Yes, you are. I wouldn't call it agriculture, he says. Dr. Paul Lee, the author of There Is a Garden in the Mind. And that's the garden we're talking about, Alan Chadwick's garden, with you right back. Go to the phones, too. Hey, welcome back. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, Dr. Paul A. Lee, he the author of There Is a Garden of the Mind, and also Dylan Thompson, who is an intern producer of the Food Chain, a student at the University of California, Santa Cruz. And of course, you may join us if you so desire. We are at 831-479-1080. We're talking about Alan Chadwick and organic. What exactly did they mean by organic? What on earth happened when the garden thrived and the students fell in love with it and they dropped their studies and gravitated toward this natural man, Alan Chadwick, and his ability to bring such incredible life from such a unusable piece of land. What did the university think of this? I mean, you've got a major conflict going here.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out into the garden.
Yep.
That was the slogan. And it didn't happen to enough or to too many students to really make much of a rumble about it. Mm-hmm. So I don't think the university even took notice of those who had left their studies to work full-time with Chadwick in the garden. So, you know, that all worked okay. Mm-hmm. There wasn't any criticism raised about it that I know of.
Okay, so Chadwick built a garden and left?
Yeah, he went to Saratoga, and then he went to Green Gulch, the Zen Farm, and then he went to Covelo up north and wound up in West Virginia with a final garden effort before he contracted cancer and came back to Green Gulch to be cared for until he died in 1980.
Mm-hmm. And so we're stuck with this notion of vitality as opposed to physicalism, your notion that there are two conflicting ways of seeing the world. One, the physicalism of building blocks, that things are just made of individual blocks with nothing that really connect them. And the vitalism of the fact that there's something else there that holds everything together.
Yeah, isn't it weird that it should fall out as a conflict between matter, like really dead matter, and
life,
you know, living organic growth? And that's exactly what happened. And in a way, industrial society as a world above the given world of nature is the expression of this material fix. Materialism became such an issue. I used to think materialism was sort of dumb, you know, as a philosophical term. You have dialectical materialism that took over the Soviet Union and communism and so on. That was even dumber. But it's amazing how matter came to be all that mattered. And my studies went on for, I don't know, maybe 10 years before all of a sudden it's like a neon light turned on. Matter. And I finally got it. That was the key term as far as the reductionism that happened after physicalism began to take sway in the early part of the 19th century.
Everything got reduced,
yep,
to its individual components.
Yeah, a matter of a combination of physical and chemical forces. That was it.
Well, folks, I think we're going to go to the phones right now. First of all, we're going to put out the phone numbers. If you care to join us and talk with Dr. Paul A. Lee, we're talking about the way we grow things and the evolution of the word organic. I guess organic really came about as just a rediscovery of life. Right?
I think so. That's what I think. Yes.
And so there we go. Well, we're going to ask you what you think. We're going to start with Thomas. Thomas, welcome to the food chain.
Yeah, hi, Michael. Hi, Dr. Lee and Dylan. I like when Dr. Lee talked about the urea situation and the creation of organics called urea. And the light that went off in my head is that this one moment in history is what brought us about, quite literally, the largest pollution problem that we face on the planet today. And that is these massive, massive islands, floating islands of plastics in all of our oceans. It's just, that light went off in my head.
It's an awesome sight when you see it on TV, and you're quite right. I mean, it's an outcome of organic chemistry. We got plastic, and then we didn't know what to do with it. Couldn't get rid of it.
Is organic a viable option to the world of I don't know, islands of plastic floating in the ocean?
Are you asking me?
Yes, I am. I mean, well, what do you think, Thomas?
I don't know what you mean by viable. You know, I'm pretty much in a doom and gloomer. I think it's all over, and I don't think it's recoverable. I mean, we've passed the tipping point, and things are unraveling more than anybody can figure out what to do about. So, you know, look at the gains that have been made since, let's say, Earth Day 1, 1970. You know, we were thrilled when Earth Day occurred because it's as though we had started the garden to have a place in which to celebrate it. We started the garden in 1967. Earth Day 1 happened in 1970. And look at the gains that have been made since then. Not a lot. You know, the percentage of organic production is very small. You probably know the percentage.
Yeah, it's actually a very big business, and it's growing like crazy. But let's talk about that because, I hear the music. Thomas, what do you think? Do you think organic is going to lead us to the promised land here?
Well, I think it could if we took it serious and if we faced the realities of what Dr. Lee pointed out, if we faced the realities of what this inorganic urea production is produced just in the plastics. It's not only produced that, but it's produced these massive feedlots which supposedly give off more methane gas than anything in the planet. If we faced these realities and realize that there is an alternative that is what Mr. Lee is talking about, a vital organic alternative, and put our research, our brightest minds, to work on improving on this process as opposed to the material process.
And we might just make it, right? Well, we're out of time, but Thomas is an optimist, and it's good to have him aboard. We will be right back. Well, folks, we have a little bit of time left and so much to talk about. One of the things I'd love to talk with Dr. Paul A. Lee, he the author of There Is a Garden in the Mind, is where we're going with organic. You guys kind of reinvented the word, didn't you, Dr. Paul Lee?
Yeah, we recovered it.
Stole it back.
Yeah, brought it back.
You didn't recover it, you stole it back.
Neo-organic.
Well, and then organic became a way of growing things, and people started asking for organic foods, and so the small farmers who were using the word thought, maybe we can give this word to the government for safekeeping. And when they gave the word to the government, and the government took full and complete ownership of the word organic, the industry exploded. It's huge. It's $35 billion a year. And Dr. Paul A. Lee, of course, is making, 10% royalty on that?
Yeah.
No?
<right.
laughs> But it's huge now. But, you know, the vitalism of what was organic is not so much there anymore, because if you look at the fields, those large fields of organic this and that growing, it's not really the French intensive biodynamic kinds of life that Alan Chadwick was talking about. Dr. Lee?
Well, like I say, I'm into the doom and gloom mentality. And to me, the environmental organic movement is the death rattle of defeated vitalism. It's as if the corpse of vitalism sat up in the coffin and went, you know, for maybe, what, 50 to 75 to 100 years? And that's going to be the end of it, folks. So I don't see much of a promising future. Things seem to be getting worse, not better. I asked you, what percentage of organic production has occurred, let's say, since Earth Day 1? And you said 2 to 3%, and now the whole picture. Well, that's not encouraging.
Well, or you could see it as we have a lot of room to grow.
Yeah, that's true. But we are in the late stage of the self-destruction of industrial society, and that's a theme that I cannot shake. I mean, it's almost like a mantra.
What does that mean for people, though, when you say that? What does that mean, the late stage?
Our social order is coming apart. It's self-destructing. And all the symptoms of it are perfectly clear.
Is it because we've stripped it of its vitalism?
I think that's the consequences that we have to suffer for the, let's say, 150, 200-year reduction to matter. So how are we going to come out of that? I don't know, because all the signs indicate that it's simply going to get progressively worse until we conclude this self-destructive phase. And if it's going to take everything down with it, then I don't know what to make of it.
Other than the fact that there will be a time to start over, and there will be a way of starting over.
And that's how we thought of the Chadwick Garden. It was a second chance, and people were surprised that there was one given as Chadwick gave it.
And if you can hold on to the Chadwick archives, maybe there will come a time when everything is said and done that we'll need that technology to rebuild our world.
Let's hope so. Now, if anybody wants to hear more of this, I'll be at Gabriella's Restaurant on Tuesday night at 7:30.
That's in Santa Cruz,
dinner
California.
Dinner and talk. Gabriella's Restaurant in Santa Cruz, Tuesday night, 7:30. Call for reservation.
And you know what? You can always find Dr. Paul A. Lee at ecotopia.org. And all of your speaking engagements are there, and so people can find you there and talk with you there. Thank you all for tuning in. Remember, cheap food isn't.
And thanks so much, Michael.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.